The next case up for argument this morning is State of South Dakota versus Stephen Fauché. For the appellant is Betsy Doyle. She will be arguing, and for the appellee, State of South Dakota, Jennifer Jorgensen is present arguing for the state. So each side will have 15 minutes for your arguments, and then Ms. Doyle, you'll have a 5-minute rebuttal. You may proceed with your argument at this time.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, I'm Betsy Doyle from the Minnehaha County Public Defender's Office. I'm here representing Stephen Michael Fauché, who is the appellant in this matter. I also represent him on the current pending criminal charges, which are still pending in Minnehaha County. Intermediate appeal was petitioned for and granted by this court. The basis for the appeal was a denial of the motion to dismiss. A motion to dismiss was filed after Mr. Fauché had been committed for over 6 years. He has an IQ of 61. The motion to dismiss was based upon South Dakota Codified Law 23A-10A-14, which was modified in 2021. The circuit court in this matter erred. The circuit court found that the doctor who had testified at hearing did not believe that there was a substantial likelihood of being restored in the foreseeable future. The circuit court found that Mr. Fauché's CAST MR score was listed at 38% despite participation in restoration efforts since 2017. The circuit court erred specifically on page 7 of its memorandum decision. It cited South Dakota Codified Law 23A-10A-14 as an outdated version of the law. The current version changes the language that was used and cited by the circuit court. Specifically, it creates that there must be found a substantial probability of foreseeable future of restoration.
Is that the direct error, Ms. Doyle? The case is, and the rule has been around since the early 70s, that a defendant who's committed and incompetent can be held indefinitely and can be held no more than a reasonable period of time to determine if they can be restored to competency. So even without this provision in the 14 statute, it seems like that was the law. One. Two, if I could have a follow-up. Did the court, in the motion to dismiss hearing or at any time prior, ever, make a finding about the likely length of this incompetency ever?
Thank you for the question, Justice Salter. To discuss the findings previously that the circuit court had made, in 2017, he was initially committed under 23A-10A-4 in February of 2017 for the 4-month time period to determine if there was a substantial probability of restoration incompetency. In July of that year, the circuit court held a hearing. Although it's not reflected in the circuit court's order, there was testimony and there was a finding, I believe, on the record where the circuit court believed that there was some possibility with vigorous and sustained efforts that he could attain capacity potentially in the future. With regard to the reasonable detention permitted by South Dakota law, I acknowledge that 23A-10A-15 allows for a term of years to be determined for a commitment when a person is determined to be incompetent and may not be able to recover. I would note that the avenue to get to 23A-10A-15 is through 23A-10A-14.
And that requires, does it not, a determination and a finding concerning the likely durability or length of the period of incompetency. And these days there's three options, but maybe there even was before the law changed for a person who's not competent. They're not competent, but there's a possibility, whatever the standard is, reasonable likelihood or substantial probability, that they'll retain or obtain competency within the year. If they do, they can be committed for up to a year, but if they don't actually attain competency within that year, then you're in the 15 statute, right?
My understanding is that it's reviewed annually under 14. Each year under 14 at the annual...
Point that text. Where's that in the text, if you know?
Sure. Well, if we're talking about the current status of 23A10A14, if the court finds that there is a substantial probability that they will remain committed within the next year, the director of the facility for which the individual is committed shall give a certificate pursuant to 23A10A4.1.
Right. But that's not a review hearing, is it? The review hearings are in 15 statute.
Correct.
Okay.
14 allows for the commitment for a period of time of 1 year, unless and until competency has been determined.
Can a person be committed and recommitted to successive one-year terms under the 14 statute without ever going to a more definite term under the 15 statute?
I believe that they can if the circuit court finds at each review hearing or each annual hearing that there would be a substantial probability of them obtaining competency within that next year.
Well, then what do you make of the fourth paragraph of the 14 statute, which says if the 1 year provided has run without a certificate being issued, it ultimately requires the court to consider a commitment under the 15 statute?
Yes. So when the certificate of non-recovery is issued, what has occurred in this case is that we are kicked back to the annual hearing under 14. And that's what the history of this case has been.
It doesn't say that. It says that you commit under 15.
Correct. There has not been any commitment or term of years defined in this matter under 23A10A15.
Should there have been?
Likely yes. In looking at the record and looking at the orders that were determined, it's also clear that there were not clear findings of the reasonable likelihood to determine if he would be committed within, or excuse me, would be restored within that year's time frame, or if he would be restored in the foreseeable future either.
But you have evidence about it, and there's no controversy of the evidence, correct?
I believe, yes, Justice. There is significant evidence in the record that indicates that Mr. Fauché will not be able to obtain competency. Specifically in 2017, even with the opinion that there may be some possibility of his competency restoration in the future, in 2018, Dr. Ada Powell had evaluated him for his annual certificate of recovery, and she found Dr. Ada Powell's in 2019, she indicated that despite 2 years restoration, Mr. Fauché had only marginally improved on his restoration efforts. She also opined that there was no realistic intervention that would be capable of sustaining improving capacity for him to be able to participate in his own defense or understand the nature and consequences of the proceedings. She further said that it was more probable than not that he will remain incompetent to assist in his defense, and all of this was due to the chronic nature of intellectual impairments. She also said that, quote, it was beyond realistic expectations that interventions existed that would be capable of making competency attainable.
So if the circuit court had made that finding consistent with that evidence, I'm a little confused now what the possible remedies are as far as you're concerned. I understood you were suggesting dismissal was the only remedy, but based on your responses to Justice Salter, it sounds like perhaps the commitment for a term of years was also an appropriate remedy.
And in 2019, with the outdated law, that would have been a different request or standard. And at that time, I believe that 23A10A15 did not include a Class C felony, which Mr. Fauché is currently facing. The language of the law at that time, I believe, was only in regard to Class A and B felonies. The motion to dismiss was based in 2021, and it was based on 23A10A14. I would also note that the avenue to get to a term of years in 2021, when the motion to dismiss was filed and litigated, would have required that there could have been possibility of competency in the foreseeable future. Under the...
So you think that the 15, forgive me, so you think the 15 statute really, that doesn't even apply unless it's an A, B, or C felony?
I believe that it was listed prior as a Class A or Class B felony in 2019 when Dr. Ada Powell made those findings. It was modified to include a Class C felony.
So, but my question is, do you think that it applies to something other than an A, B, or C felony, like any other case, or any other crime?
No, Justice.
It only applies to those A, B, or C felonies today?
Yes. Okay. I would note, going back, Justice Myron, to if 23A10A15 would apply at this point or in 2021, in paragraph 4, in paragraph 3 of 23A10A15, it gives guidance to courts, and it says that if there is no substantial probability that the defendant will become competent within 1 year, but there is a substantial probability that the defendant will become competent within the foreseeable future, then commitment consistent with 23A10A15 is the avenue to go. The last paragraph of 23A10A14, however, indicates that if there's no substantial probability that the defendant will become competent in the foreseeable future, then the court shall dismiss. So I believe that if the record reflects that there is no substantial probability that an individual will become competent in the foreseeable future, the court shall dismiss.
I'm sorry. Are you okay on time? I've been asking you a lot of questions about these statutes, but if I could, can I take you right to the essence of your argument, which is the court's conclusion that Mr. Fauché, and this is the quote, was not or is not currently competent to stand trial. However, operative portion here follows. Court does not find that there is no substantial probability that he will attain competency in the foreseeable future due to the impact of COVID-19 protocols and competency restoration. Is that a finding? Is that a non-finding? What is that?
I believe that the circuit court did not go to the extent of saying that there is no substantial probability that he will become competent in the foreseeable future. I believe that in the memorandum order, the decision misstated the authority that the court was required to find. The court, I believe, stated that it cannot find that he will never become competent, and the standard is not ever or never. The standard is substantial probability with foreseeable future, not ever or never. Furthermore, Justice, I do believe that the record is very clear and firm. The record for the past 6 years has been void of any hope or aspiration of restoration in Mr. Fauché's matter.
Yeah, that was my next question, actually. If so, what does relief look like for you? Relief would be reversal of the decision to deny the motion to dismiss. But then is it remand for fact-finding, or is it, as you suggest, so clear on the record that there's just nothing from which you could base a factual finding?
Justice Salter, my position is that the review of the record and the circuit court's own findings in 2021 gives this court a definite and firm guidance that a mistake has been made. My relief requested is a reversal in the matter, a reversal of the denial of the motion to dismiss. There is significant evidence in the record, and even in testimony from 2021 at that hearing, that's clearly in contrary to the denial of the motion to dismiss.
But you would say, not just reverse, but you would say, is there a need to go back for fact-finding on remand or not? That's kind of what I'm driving at.
I think that the facts are clear. If there was needed to be an order that was reflective of the facts that are already in the record, I don't believe that fact-finding may need to be made, but I would leave that up to the court.
Okay. So if the circuit court did not make a finding with respect to the ability to be to become competent again, it's not enough for us to say there's significant evidence in the record if you want us to decide it. It has to be uncontroverted. Do you think that's the state of the record in 2021? It's uncontroverted that he's never going to get better, or not the language of
yes,
the statute,
yes.
That there's not a significant likelihood of...
Yes. Thank you, Justice, for that clarification. I would say that I don't believe it's uncontroverted. There was testimony and there was evidence and argument made with regard to the pandemic and the effect that that had on his current scores, and I would have a response to that. If the state so made that argument.
I'd like to hear the response.
Thank you.
You know, the record seems to imply that your client's competency restoration is occurring telephonically. Even the evaluations are occurring telephonically, and that there's testimony in the record that in-person sessions, flashcards, and other remedial in-person educational efforts might help your client attain competency.
Thank you, Justice. I would direct the court back to the record before the pandemic as well. 2019, as stated, he had been very active in restoration efforts. He had been very compliant. He had been doing everything that had been asked of him. After 2 years of restoration efforts and significant effort on my client's part, Dr. Ada Powell still opined that there was no realistic intervention that would be capable of getting him to the point where he would need to be. He has an IQ of 61, as stated, and he has intellectual disability along with some other ailments that prohibit him in order from having the capacity to understand complex legal matters and assisting in his defense and decision making.
But it strikes me that this is an area where lay people like us can't really make that determination. And so, who knows? I mean, wouldn't someone have to pull that together, an expert? For instance, Dr. Youngworth, the only witness at the December 7, 2021 motion to dismiss hearing. But somebody who has the qualifications would have to sort of pull that together, wouldn't they, and say, yes, the COVID protocols or the impediment that existed was significant, and without it, that will have this impact on competency restoration, which is to say, there will be a substantial likelihood that he'll recover competency in the foreseeable future or not. I mean, I don't think we can make that decision, can we, that competency restoration was hampered by COVID and that will have an effect that's good, bad, or indifferent on competency restoration?
Dr. Youngworth's testimony was very vague but hypothetical speaking. She said that maybe there were efforts such as flashcards or face-to-face interventions, but even through all of the possibilities that Dr. Youngworth at hearing could imagine, her testimony still was that he was not competent and that there was not a substantial probability that he would become competent in the foreseeable future.
Your time is up, Ms.
Thank Bill. You.
Thank you. Ms. Jorgensen, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. The case before this court regards the competency of Stephen Fauché to stand trial for his charges of 2 counts of first-degree rape of a child less than 13 years old and his 2 counts of sexual contact with a person less than 16 years old. A person cannot be tried, sentenced, or punished for any public offense while he is incompetent to proceed. Relevant here, a defendant is mentally incompetent to stand trial if he is suffering from a mental disease or developmental disability, rendering him unable to understand the nature and the consequences of the proceedings against him or to assist in his defense. In 2017, the circuit court determined that the defendant was incompetent to stand trial and ordered him to undergo competency restoration training. Since that time, there has been conflicting opinions of mental health professionals who have evaluated the defendant. Additionally, the defendant has received differing levels of treatment because of the impacts of COVID-19. His last 2 annual evaluations were conducted when there was COVID-19 protocols in place. In November 2021, the defendant filed a motion to dismiss, arguing that there was no substantial probability that he would become competent to proceed in the foreseeable future, and that justified dismissal of his charges.
And did the 2021 judge ever make a finding on that?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what was that finding as far as you read it?
On the first page of her opinion, she made that finding that she cannot find that there was no substantial probability that he would become competent to proceed in the foreseeable future.
That seems like a conclusion. Not really a finding.
And then she, yes, Your Honor, she also found that there was factual findings to support that as well. She found that there was all of these impacts of COVID-19 on these restoration efforts. Because in 2018, the defendant was receiving vastly different treatment than the treatment he was currently receiving when the COVID-19.
But the question really, I'm sorry, forgive me, the question really isn't whether his restoration efforts were hampered. The question really is, under the statute, different. It relates to the likelihood that he'll recover or attain competency, not how bad it's been on the efforts, but whether there's a likelihood, substantial probability that he'll attain competency. And if there is a progression based upon the court's findings as to the reasonable or the likely length of it. If it can be recovered within a year, or the experts think so, then there can be one type of commitment. If not, but certainly the testimony is within the foreseeable future, a different kind of commitment. If, however, particularly now, that we have this Jackson rule that seems to be codified in our 14 statute, if there's a finding that the substantial probability exists that the defendant will never recover competency, the statute says very clearly dismiss. So it seems to me like it has to be one of those. And the court can't just say, I don't know. I mean, I can't make that finding. I think it seems like the court has to make some sort of a finding regarding the likely length of the incompetency. And while you're thinking about that, can I just say, I think maybe the reason might be because Jackson exists as an overarching principle for all of this. And it seems to require that someone who's subjected to competency can't be interminably held without a definite endpoint, a beginning, a middle, and an end, at which point either the case goes away, the person is restored to competency, and they can proceed to trial. I don't know if we have a beginning, a middle, and an end in this case.
So the due process requirements in Jackson do require that the nature and the duration of the commitment bear a reasonable relationship to the purpose for which he's committed. And I believe that the circuit court was applying Jackson and was doing that analysis, that the nature of his commitment was to provide him with competency training, and it was reasonable to hold him longer for that purpose.
But she still has to, the circuit judge still has to comply with the statute in order to continue with the detention, and the statute requires that you enter a finding that says that there's no substantial likelihood, finding whether there is a substantial likelihood that the person's going to attain competency. The finding that you recited to me, it seems like it could be one of two things, and I'm not entirely sure what it was. It's either poor wordsmanship, meaning that the circuit judge actually decided and said, no, there is no possibility of him doing it, or there is a possibility of him doing it, or the other one is that the decision was, maybe I don't have enough information to make that decision, in which case, is that even an option? I think that's what Justice Salter suggested earlier. At that point, shouldn't the judge say, well, I have an obligation to make this finding, so present me more evidence if I have inadequate information to make the decision? So which position is it that you're taking, that the circuit judge actually made the necessary finding, or found that I can't make that finding?
Thank you, Your Honor. My position is that she made that finding. She used double negatives in that finding. Well, it might be inartfully worded. She was finding that there was a substantial probability that the defendant will attain competency in the foreseeable future.
So, counsel, walk me through the procedure here. And so, what's the maximum penalty that Mr. Fauché could be subjected to
for a
Class C felony?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. And so, he's been held a number of years with review or competency hearings held every year. Is there an end date? I mean, can he be held for 10 years, 15 years, waiting to restore competency, or is it a year-by-year determination? And then how does this statute coalesce with 10A15?
Thank you.
So at some point, let's say that this case is dismissed because he's not able to be restored to competency. What happens then? The charges are dismissed? Is he released? Is he committed under another provision?
No.
How do you see these statutes playing out?
Thank you, Your Honor. So it does appear that he was committed on a year-to-year basis, and that if the charges under the version of 15 that he was So if these charges were dismissed, there would have to be a determination of what statutes were being applied, if we were going to apply the new version of 15 or the old version of 15, and then there would have to be a finding of dangerousness to see if he would be civilly committed.
Do you agree with Ms. Doyle that the 15 statute really only applies to A or B, but now C felonies, and doesn't apply to commitments for any other crime?
No, Your Honor, I don't agree with that.
Right. You think that it applies to all crimes could be, or defendants who are charged with any sort of crime could be committed under the 15 statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. He was never committed under the 15 statute, though, was he?
It appears in this case that he was never committed under the 15 statute, but if that statute does apply, it's presumed that judges correctly apply the law. If you read these orders, they were doing year-to-year commitments that would be reviewed and potentially extended if they determined that was appropriate.
It kind of looks like a 15 statute commitment for a while, doesn't it? There's even the annual hearings that look like what we might think of an annual review hearing under the 15 statute. The difference is there's no terminal point, right? Because this is just an ad hoc year-to-year. As Justice Kern may have alluded to, that seems to have been the course. However, if he was committed under the 15 statute, you would know. It would be 5 years or 7 years or 6 years or whatever. But as we sit here now in 2023, it doesn't seem like there's any more of an identifiable terminal point for this period of commitment than there was in 2017 when it started. But maybe I'm missing something.
So under 15, judges have the inherent authority to review and revise their orders. That appears that if 15 was to be applied, that could have been what was happening. And under 15, they're required to review the order of detention and determine he was competent. Under 15, the order also has to be reasonable. And that's something that they were determining every year, was if this was reasonable.
All of which is true. But the dismissal provision under 15 is different. The 15 dismissal provision is just a timeout. You just time out. There is no finding. You get to the end of the term, whatever it is, if the person hasn't attained competency, the case is dismissed. That's missing in this case, it seems like.
There was no order of detention entered that had an expiration date.
So your view is that there's just going to be yearly hearings until a final determination is made at some point whether or not there's a probability that he can achieve competency?
No, Your Honor, that new provision of 14 would also apply, that there has to be a substantial probability that in the foreseeable future he could become competent. And then there's also, to review that for reasonableness, there's also due process considerations where the nature and the duration of the commitment has to have a reasonable resemblance for the reason why he's committed. And then that has to be justified each year as to why they're continuing the commitment.
So he's been committed 5 to 6 years now? 5 or 6 years? Where do we draw the line there? Is that just made on a year-by-year basis?
Yes, Your Honor. That is a factual determination for the court to make.
So if you were to prevail here and we were to affirm the judge's decision to deny the dismissal motion, then what happens? He continues on these successive year-to-year commitments? Is he committed under the 15 statute for a term of years, at which point we would know for sure the case is either going to go away or he's going to be prosecuted or whatever? What happens on remand if you win?
On remand, our position is that what they were doing was consistent with 15, that they were revising the order of commitment. But if this court holds that there has to be an order of commitment...
I don't know how you can say that, though, because there's no terminal point. Under 15, you can't keep bumping it out. You have a point, whatever it is. It has to be reasonable, of course. But I don't know, and I don't want to quarrel with you, but I don't know how that corresponds to the commitments that we have here, because there's no end point, and that's kind of what I'm driving at. So should he be committed if he goes, if the state wins and you go back, should he be committed for a term of years so that he knows when it's over, or what?
Under 15, there's nothing in that provision that says that they can't modify it. And there is case law that says that judges have the inherent ability to modify and revise their orders. But if that's not, if this court disagrees with that, that they cannot do that, then on remand, it would be appropriate for the court to enter a term of years with an expiration date.
In light of your response to Justice Myron's question about the finding, and in your view, I think, was, hey, take the double negatives out, mm-hmm. It's a finding. Is that right? I've got your...
That's correct.
Yeah. So is this a clear error review then? And we're just reviewing the factual sufficiency of the court's finding in that regard? There's really not a legal issue?
So the standard for motions to dismiss are an abuse of discretion, but findings of fact are reviewed under the clearly erroneous standard, and then conclusions of law are de novo.
So what evidence is it in the hearing record of 2021 that would support a finding that you've suggested to me the court made?
Thank you, Your Honor. So in 20, the court reviewed the entire record of the proceedings and ruling on this motion. In 2018, there was a certificate of competency filed with the court. Ultimately, the circuit court determined to continue his commitment, and he was not competent at that time, but the state believes that that certificate of competency would go to support that finding. In 2018, he was receiving vigorous treatment that was recommended by Dr. Zimbelman. He was having in-person instruction. He was seeking out educators.
So you think that evidence, which was ultimately not persuasive at an earlier hearing in 2018 in front of a different circuit judge, is available to a different judge in December of 2021 and can form a basis for factual findings? When that judge never received that evidence, didn't listen to any testimony, didn't do anything like that? Maybe you're right, but I'm trying to figure out the rule that would allow that.
The court said she was reviewed, that she relied. I believe she said she
was. Well, she might. That might be the case, but I'm saying, is that right? Can she do that? Can the court do that?
There was no objection to her doing that, Your Honor.
Okay.
What role does the pandemic play in this and the type of restoration services that the court found that Mr. Fauchet was receiving?
So that would go to show what treatment would be available in the foreseeable future. It would be treatment that was similar to that 2018 treatment he received that led to him to making progress and led to that certificate of recovery being filed. So that would go to show what would be available in the foreseeable future.
Your time is up, Ms. Jorgensen. Thank you.
Thank you.
You may proceed, Ms. Doyle, with rebuttal.
Thank you. I'd like to respond to some of the conversations with regard to potential future efforts that could be done for Mr. Fauchet, or the notion that the circuit court may not have had enough information about future potential treatment or restoration efforts that could be made. I would direct the court to the chapter of 23A, 10A, and recognize that it is the state's burden to prove this. It is not Mr. Fauchet's burden to prove competency. Furthermore, Jackson v. Indiana stated, quote, even if determined that defendant would probably soon be able to stand trial with continued treatment, continued commitment must be justified by progress towards that goal. It's my position that there has to be a stated progress, there has to be a stated plan. The testimony at the 2021 hearing by Dr. Youngworth did not include any sort of concrete, identifiable efforts that could be made for the future. I would also recognize that 23A, 10A, 14 reflects and respects the constitutional norms. The foundation for 23A, 10A, 14 the foundation for Jackson v. Indiana, is Mr. Fauché's constitutional due process right. I'd finally, unless there's other questions or information to respond to.
Well, tell me your position to your opposing counsel's statement that the judge in the 2021 hearing is allowed to go back and take the evidence from the 2018 hearing and use it to make findings to support a finding that does not include evidence in the 2021 hearing.
I would not agree that that would be appropriate. However, the testimony that was provided in the 2018 hearing was actually provided by Dr. Youngworth. At the time in 2018, she was a qualified mental health professional. Since 2018, she obtained her doctorate, and she is now a doctor. So even if that information was to be used, it should be noted that it was the same doctor, it was the same witness who provided that past testimony in 2018, and she still based her opinion in 2021 and stated that she did not believe there was substantial probability that he would become competent in the foreseeable future.
Counsel, since we're talking about how the facts and the record do support a ruling that there is a uncertainty being expressed by both you, your counsel, and perhaps even the court, not really sure what the court found. And since it does require a factual finding, wouldn't a proper remedy be to remand to the court? And you also pointed out in your view the court applied the wrong standard and wasn't applying the current statute, which does appear that possibly happened, that we remanded to the circuit court to apply the correct standard, the correct statute, and comply with the dictates of the statute in light of the evidence that was before the court at that time.
Yes, I do believe that would be an appropriate remedy. I do stand by the notion that the record is void of a supporting decision by a circuit court that the motion to dismiss should be denied. So I do stand by the ample record that would indicate that there is no substantial probability.
So there are two possibilities of remand, though. There's a possibility of remand for a new hearing with additional evidence, or remand based on the evidence that has already been presented to the court. You're advocating that it's a remand based on the evidence already presented without new evidence, and then what's your position, if I understand correctly, and then what's your support for that theory, that should be the scope of our remand?
Support for the theory that it should be...
That the scope of remand should only be the evidence that had already been presented.
I believe that the doctor who had testified at hearing provided evidence was subject to cross-examination for the motion to dismiss. So I believe that both sides would have had opportunity to provide or elicit information from that witness, which is basing the opinion or the only witness who testified at hearing. Even if new evidence were to be presented or provided, I'm confident given the history of this case and confident given knowing Mr. Fauché, that there would not be information that would guide a circuit court to get to the threshold of substantial probability of competency in the foreseeable future. With regard to 23A10A15 and the notion of having some sort of term or some sort of endpoint, I would offer this court that there is an endpoint, and that point is now. The endpoint is a dismissal. That is the only appropriate and lawful remedy here for Mr. Fauché. I would note that to keep charges pending, it would be an inappropriate allocation of important resources to keep us coming back year to year, given the opinions and given the record in this matter. Continued commitment pending charges is a strain on our state resources and a violation of Mr. Fauché's constitutional and statutory rights. There are avenues for additional safety concerns that the public or this court or the state may have. Those avenues are codified under 27A and 27B, which would likely be most appropriate.